This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Several companies say they're on the verge of figuring out how to harness nuclear fusion for commercial energy. Nuclear fusion is the same process that powers the sun, and advocates say if scientists are able to make it happen here on Earth on a large scale, it could be an effectively limitless source of clean energy. Here's John Kerry, U.S. Special Envoy for Climate Change, talking at the United Nations Climate Conference earlier this week.
There is potential in fusion to revolutionize our world and to change all of the options that are in front of us and provide the world with abundant and clean energy without the harmful emissions of traditional energy sources.
Although nuclear fusion would be a big deal, there's still a long way to go. The current record for a controlled nuclear fusion reaction on Earth is just 8 minutes. We're talking about the possibility of using nuclear fusion as a source of clean energy. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been following the development, the research on fusion power over the years, over the decades? Are you hopeful that it could be a practical source of energy, maybe in our lifetimes? What questions do you have about how it works? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Kerry Forrest is a professor of physics and director of the Wisconsin Plasma Physics Laboratory at UW-Madison. He's co-founder of Rialta Fusion, a Madison-based startup. Kerry, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
Can you give us the basics of what fusion is and how it works?
Fusion is a nuclear process by which light atoms such as hydrogen come together, fuse, and produce heavier atoms like helium and give off energy through a change in their overall mass, just as Einstein predicted.
Now, we've been working
to do that. To make that happen, you have to get the nuclei of those atoms close enough to each other that the nuclear forces can take over from the electric forces that keep them apart. And that requires really hot, energetic temperatures such that the reactions take place like they do in the sun. The sun's quite hot, 100 million degrees, and that gives the particles enough average energy that they're able to overcome that electric propulsion and fuse together and give off their nuclear energy.
And that's the challenge, as I understand it, trying to get something like those middle of the sun conditions to happen on Earth in a controlled and sustained way. And this is why it's been something that we've been researching for quite a while, right? Trying to meet those challenges.
Indeed, that's the big challenge. We know how to make those conditions. We can put energy into a gas and heat it up using things like microwaves and so forth. But the difficulty is insulating it from the cold surrounding matter that we have here on Earth. And so that insulation, you can heat something to a very high temperature if you can somehow insulate it. So we have different ways of doing that. One is to use magnetic fields configured in a certain way using electromagnets to build a bottle, a thermos bottle, if you will, using those magnetic fields to keep the hot gas off of the cold walls.
Now, and as I understand it, there are a couple different main methods that people are using. Loosely, there's the laser method and there's the magnetic containment method, or tokamak, I think is how they say it. Can you explain the basics of those two approaches?
Sure. So the laser method, the idea is that we can use for a very, very short period of time the inertia, if you will, of the material itself to hold it in place long enough for the fusion to take place. So lasers are used to heat the gas, turn it into a plasma, and make it dense enough that the fusion essentially ignites, much in the way an H-bomb might ignite, and give off a very small but controlled explosion of energy that consumes up the fuels of hydrogen and gives off the fusion energy. Harnessing that would be a big challenge. The other technique, and perhaps the more likely to be commercialized, although I wouldn't want to put my finger on that scale at this moment, would be to use magnetic fields we create magnetic fields in, you know, using electromagnets, and we have different geometries. The geometry that's most common is called a tokamak geometry. It was invented in the Soviet Union in the 1960s, and it creates a donut-shaped magnetic field that particles travel around, orbiting around the magnetic field lines, if you will, and the field lines never touch surfaces, so the particles never cool off.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Peter's with us in Stoughton. Peter, hi.
Good afternoon. I think people, well, you just mentioned a date, but I think people should keep in mind that this isn't some newfangled idea. As far back as 1990, I built the cryostat and annulus for a plasma fusion reactor that was a collaboration between MIT and Lawrence Livermore Labs. And it was even interesting back then to, okay, this might be the next step. This might be the next step. And here we are all these years later, getting to the next step. And I'm hoping I live to see this become successful.
Peter, thanks a lot for sharing that experience. And Carrie, I think there's a running joke that plasma is always 10 years in the future, no matter your starting point, which is kind of unfair because, as Peter points out, there has been research, there have been developments. We're inching closer and closer. Can you talk about the horizon for sustainable, usable fusion energy potentially?
Absolutely. I often tell the story that in the mid-90s, you know, I was working in mainstream fusion tokamak world, and I had a decision to make, which was what I was going to do with the next 20 years of my life. And there was a device being built in the south of France called ITER, and it was only going to have its first plasma starting in the mid, you know, in 2016 or something like that. And it wasn't even going to demonstrate fusion conditions until the early 2020s. And that was so far away at the time. I basically decided to work more on plasma astrophysics questions rather than working on nuclear fusion research because it just seemed so far in the future. But a lot has changed even in the last decade that can give us some hope. And so in addition to the fact that things have gotten bigger and more expensive to build, which is the main thing slowing things down at this stage, the progress in fusion energy production, as measured by gain, if you will, made rapid progress, sort of faster than the progress made on packing semiconductors onto chips for computers. The progress was enormous, but then it stalled out because the next steps became too expensive to build. And that's part of the problem. So the companies that are starting now are using ways to reduce the size and cost of the reduce the size and complexity of the fusion systems. One way to do that is to use much stronger magnets than were possible even a decade ago. There's a new generation of superconducting magnets that allows us to build magnets at least twice or more stronger fields than was even possible a decade ago. And in Boston, for example, there's a company called CFS that's working on that project. And we're also hoping to use those high field magnets here on a simpler concept called a mirror to make it work.
Carrie Forrest is with us, professor of physics, director of the Wisconsin Plasma Physics Laboratory at UW-Madison, talking about the possibility of nuclear fusion as a clean energy source in the future. Big question, how distant future are we talking about? You could join in at 800-642-1234. Carrie just mentioned private companies getting in the game. Say they're getting closer to creating nuclear fusion energy that could be hooked up to the power grid at some point. Are you hopeful? Do you have questions about how this will work? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with UW-Madison physics professor Carrie Forrest about the possibility of nuclear fusion as a clean energy source. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts, your hopes, your worries, your questions about nuclear fusion as a potential source of clean energy? What do you know about how it works? What do you want to know? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now with John in Lake Halley. John, hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question on how are you harnessing the energy that's coming out of this fusion? Are you running electrons through a magnetic field, or is it just the old standard heat up water and turn turbines that way?
That's a great question, John. We produce that nuclear fusion energy. How do we turn it into electricity that we can use?
Absolutely, great question. So the energy can be harnessed in several ways, and the most straightforward is just to heat up a liquid. But maybe you're not going to heat up a liquid like water, as in a fission reactor. Maybe you would be heating up a liquid metal. Maybe it would be lithium or lead lithium, and that would be coming out at a much higher temperature than you would have, say, with water. And so that heat could be used for different things. It could be used to drive a turbine, very high efficiency turbine, to make electricity. But you might also use it to produce things commercially by using the process heat directly. And there are plenty of places where we can impact our fossil fuel usages by using the process heat directly. We also have, so systems like tokamaks, that would almost certainly be the case that you'd be heating up a blanket of molten metal or salt or something like that. But then there are other open systems where you might harness the outflowing plasma energy and turn it into a current and a DC power source, if you will, and harness it directly. That's much more efficient in principle if you're going to produce electricity. So both are options, and it's a great question.
Yeah, John, thanks a lot for calling in with that question. I want to talk a little more about time horizon. Now, we had Special Envoy John Kerry talk about this at a climate change conference. Now, maybe if we have fusion power and that's the standard in 100 years, great. Talking about it at a time scale that can affect our current concerns about climate change in the next 10 to 12 years, are we worried about putting a lot of eggs in that basket that may not hatch in time?
Well, I certainly know that the goal is to have major increases in both fission and fusion by 2040 in order to have a big impact on climate change. So that's kind of on the horizon that you're talking about. And that's where most of the commercial entities that are popping up are promising, you know, to have demonstration reactors on the 10-year time frame and then a commercialization that comes shortly thereafter.
Now, people may think about nuclear energy and think about nuclear fission, the nuclear power we have now, and think about, you know, the waste and the long-running questions about what we do with waste from nuclear power plants. Is that a concern with nuclear fusion? I mean, if we're just making helium, are we all cool with waste?
Yeah, so it's there are it's a nuclear process. The most of the energy from the easiest to harness fusion reactions come out in the form of neutrons. The neutrons can interact with the material around the plasma that hold the thing together, that make up the vessels and so forth. And those can create new radioactive elements that have some half-life that need to be dealt with when the fusion reactor shuts off. And so there's a huge amount of research right now to find the perfect material to go around a fusion system and to make sure that those radioactive byproducts are very short-lived and don't require the long-lived places, you know, like Yucca Mountain to hold them later on. The volume is also a thing. We don't want very much of that. And so maybe we can recycle those walls and go into a system where the waste is reduced further. So a lot of that has to be fleshed out.
I want to talk about some of the wow stuff now, Carrie. What kind of temperatures are we talking about here to sustain a usable fusion reaction?
Yeah, so 100 million degrees. That's about 10 times the temperature of the core of the sun. And in order to do it here on Earth, we don't have the advantage of size and gravity. So we use magnetic fields to hold those enormous pressures in place rather than gravity by using magnetic fields. And the temperature needs to be higher because, again, we'll have a core that's burning and we'll have a cold edge, which isn't. And in order to get significant amount out, we have to go to even higher temperatures than the sun.
And briefly, as I understand it, we're creating plasma, not the part of our blood, but the state of matter that can occur at these kind of temperatures.
Sure.
And part of the problem, just in our last minute or so, Carrie, is plasma is kind of hard to predict and we don't get to play with it very much. How big a challenge is that?
That's a huge challenge. But one of the things that really helps us there is that the speed with which computers can now keep up and actually calculate, you know, where all the particles are going that make up the plasma, the charged particles and so forth, has increased so much in the last 60 years that we can almost model every particle in the computer, track its orbits, and predict what would happen without having to understand at a more fundamental level. So computation is allowing us to design these systems, you know, in the computer before we build them, and that's much cheaper.
Carrie, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Carrie Forrest, professor of physics and director of the Wisconsin Plasma Physics Laboratory at UW-Madison. He talked to us to look at some of the latest news on nuclear fusion, a big topic at that big climate conference, the international one you may have been hearing about, looking at the latest research on nuclear fusion and how it could be used as a clean energy source in the maybe not too distant future.